we indeed serve a very mighty, wonderful, and powerful God. We serve a patient God. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is how truly patient God is with us. I know he's been patient for me, very patient with me. And as we continue our journey in the Gospel of Mark today, we're going to be looking at a rather large section of Mark that shows us just this. It's from Mark chapter 8 through 10. First keying on one particular moment in Mark chapter 8, and then we'll be looking at some various moments that occur after this moment to see the truth of the fact that God is truly patient with us. But before we get into Mark 8, 22 through 26, I want to ask a question. Have you ever felt like you didn't get it? You just missed the point. It was going over your head. No matter what the subject would be, have you ever felt like you were just kind of adrift at sea? I know there have been many times in my life where I found myself saying words like, come again? Could you repeat that one more time? Would you explain that to me like I was in kindergarten, please? Because that's what I need right now. Life can truly be very confusing. And in many different ways, and especially in this day and age, I mean, there's been a lot of confusion, a lot of just chaos, just trying to navigate through this past year, yet alone. And I think we can all say there's been times where we've been confused about what to do and what not to do. What's the right thing? What's the wrong thing? How should we act? How should we move? How should we live? There is a point in time where we all get to that point where we just don't understand. We don't get it right. And we all have these moments where things have to be explained to us over and over and over again. Thanks be to God that our gracious God in his rich love and mercy for us is always ready and willing to explain it again and again until we see him for who he truly is. No matter how many times we have to come before him on our knees saying, Lord, I messed up again. No matter how many times we have to beg for forgiveness. No matter how many times we read his word and go, what does this even mean? He takes our hand as a parent would take their child's hand and shows us again. Shows us again, tells us again. He corrects us, reorients us, and puts us on the right path again. And if you hear anything from today's message, please hear this truth, that Jesus is willing to show us again and again, no matter how many times it takes, for us to fully and truly see him for who he is. This is what our passage from the Gospel of Mark is about, and the stories that come after. This whole section is about us missing the point. 8 through 10 is all about that, how we so often can miss the point. But Jesus is ready and willing to help reorient us, to correct us, and teach us yet again. And it all starts with a story about Jesus restoring the sight of a blind man in Mark. Chapter 8, verse 22 through 26. It says this, and they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, do you see anything? And he looked up and said, I see people, but they look like trees walking. Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again and opened his eyes. His sight was restored and he saw everything clearly. And he sent him to his home saying, do not even enter the village. In reading this, we must ask about a peculiar thing that happens here. And what is that peculiar thing about the story? Is it that there's a blind man getting healed? One could say that is kind of peculiar, especially in this time period. This was an extraordinary feat in this time period. And blindness, even in this time period, was an epidemic level condition. It's what we would call an epidemic. Because you got to think, they didn't have the basic hygiene practices we have today. They also didn't have modern medicine, nor did they have optometrists who could work on your eyes when you're having trouble with your eyes. And then you add all the harsh environments, the deserts that were in this area, the winds, the bacteria, everything. You know, if you ever had pink eye, a bad case of pink eye, where your eyes actually swelled up shut, you understand fully what it would have been like if you had never gotten the medicine to treat that pink eye. And something as simple as pink eye, as simple as that is to us today, that was a lifelong blindness for them then. Because they didn't have the ability to get the treatments that we have to be cured of those kind of things. And praise be to God that we have modern medicine to take care of simple things like a bacteria infection. They didn't have that then. Blindness would have been considered an epidemic. And the sad thing about being blind, the truth of it is, your life was pretty much over at that point. You were destined to be a beggar. There wasn't really any use for you then. It wasn't like today where we have wonderful things like audio recordings, Braille, seeing eye dogs. We have all these things in place in our society to help people who are blind so that they can continue to function and they can continue to live a full life even with their blindness. They didn't have that then. To lose one's sight was truly a terrible plight. And that was the story of this blind man. So is this the peculiar thing that happens, that Jesus heals a blind man, even though because it would be considered peculiar, because in the Gospel of John 9:32, it says this about a guy who was born blind: never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. Truly, this was an extraordinary feat that Jesus does for this man. But it's not the peculiar thing we are looking for. It isn't even the method by which Jesus heals the man. And what I'm speaking of here, spitting in the man's eyes. And imagine that. Can you heal my friend, Jesus? That would be insulting, wouldn't it? But no. And then Jesus rubs the spit in with his hand. That's pretty peculiar if you ask me. But for Mark, it really isn't too far off the point with how Mark tells the stories of how Jesus heals people. In fact, in chapter 7, we hear this story, this wonderful story in verse 31 through 37, where Mark heals a deaf man who also has a speech impediment. And what he does there is what I like to call the reverse wet willy. He puts his fingers in his ears, and then he rubs his tongue after he spits, of course. I promised I wasn't going to say this, but I have to. That must have been a holy loogie. This is all I got to say. I'm sorry, I digress now. Oh my gosh. But yeah, he as if these people need just that mother's touch. You got chocolate on your face. We can say that's peculiar. But even in the Gospel of Mark, it's not. We see Jesus doing things like this, these weird methods of healing. And we know it's not because Jesus sticks his fingers in people's ears. We know it's not because he spits. We know it's not because he rubs eyes. It's because he's the Son of God. He is God in the flesh. And so we know that this isn't the peculiar thing that we're looking for here. But what is peculiar? What is different about this miracle over any other miracle recorded in the Bible? Can anybody tell me the one thing we haven't covered? Rose? He had to do it twice. Yes, Rose, that was the right answer. He had to touch him twice. Why? Why did Jesus have to touch this man's eyes twice to restore his sight? It truly is a peculiar thing when you think about it. Was the first touch not adequate enough? Did Jesus mess up somehow? Did the man not have enough faith? You know, I don't think it had anything to do with the man's faith, because anytime something had something to do with someone's faith, Jesus was vocal about it. You know, if you read the Gospels, you'll see him say, oh, you have little faith. Oh, it's because you had little faith. Oh, if you would just have more faith. Jesus is very vocal in those situations when it's a faith issue. It's not a faith issue for this man. So that brings us back to, was Jesus' first touch somehow inadequate? Was he like the dog from Up when he sees a squirrel and he just heals? Oh, what's going on over here? No. That wasn't the problem. It's important for us to understand Jesus' touch is never inadequate and is never not enough. It is always what we need when we need it. Because when we look at this moment in the greater context of Mark, with what's about to come and what's about to happen several times over, we see something very important that goes back to this healing of a blind man, where Jesus has to touch him not once, but has to touch him twice. Jesus does everything he does with intentionality. There is purpose. There is meaning behind it. And Mark sees this purpose. And in particular, the purpose is sometimes it takes more than once to open the eyes of the blind. I would argue it takes more than once all the time to open the eyes of the blind, because we could be a very stubborn and prideful people. And we're not just talking about physical blindness here. This isn't about physical blindness. It's about spiritual blindness. And he's teaching us a lesson. He's teaching the disciples a lesson. And Mark sees it and records it for us and shows us. And he starts first with this man at Bethsaida who Jesus touches twice. And as I asked at the very beginning of our message, have you ever felt like he just didn't get it? Jesus knows who we are and how we process and receive things. And in this, he knows good and well and wants us to know something. It takes more than once. There's never going to be a morning where you wake up and be like, oh, I have arrived. I now see clearly and know everything clearly. I know all the things of God just so clearly. That's never going to happen. He knows good and well and wants us to know that it takes more than once. Especially, as I said, with our stubborn natures, my stubborn nature and prideful nature. This is what the story of the healing of the blind man in Bethsaida shows us. As the story continues in verse 27 through 33, it says this. So this is immediately after this moment. And Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they told him, John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, and others, one of the prophets. And he asked them, but who do you say that I am? Peter answered him, you are the Christ. And he strictly charged them to tell no one about him. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed. And after 3 days, rise again. I want to stop there before we get into verse 32 and 33, because I want to capture this moment. Wouldn't this have been a triumphal moment? You would think it would be, right? A triumphant moment where Jesus would go, bingo! You get it! You got the right answer! Because Peter has the right answer verbally. Linguistically, he has the right answer. Peter can use the right words. But Peter doesn't understand what those words mean. Peter doesn't understand his answer. Peter knows that 2 + 2 = 4, but he doesn't know why. He just knows it does. Peter knows that Jesus is the Christ. So do the disciples, but they don't understand what that means, which is why Jesus explains to them, this means that I'm going to be handed over by the chief priests and scribes. I'm going to suffer. I'm going to die on a cross. And then 3 days later, I'm going to rise again from the grave, conquering sin and death once and for all. This wasn't what the disciples presumed It wasn't what they assumed, especially when they announced that you are the Christ. You are the Messiah, the chosen one sent by God. And that's why we see what happens in verse 32. And it says about Jesus, and he said this plainly. So Jesus spelled this out for his disciples. It was plainly said to them. There was no parables, nothing of the such. He says it plainly. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. I can see Peter grabbing Jesus. You can't be talking like this, Jesus. Seriously. Like, if you're the Messiah, that's ridiculous. No, you can't, Jesus. But then it says in verse 33, but turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. You missed the point, Peter. That's what Jesus is telling Peter. Now, does Jesus tell Peter to leave and never come back? No. Does Peter get told that, hey, you're just never going to get it? No. He corrects Peter. He reorients Peter. He helps Peter understand he doesn't see it fully now, but maybe one day he will. You're setting your eyes on the things of man, not of God, Peter. Let's correct that. Let's reorient that. But the main point here is Peter missed the point. Much like we miss the point. The disciples miss the point, much like we often miss the point. Because for Jesus to the disciples to be the Messiah, the Christ, what this meant was he was going to be a ruling, reigning king who was going to come and overthrow the Roman Empire and reestablish the kingdom of Israel to its former glory as it was in the days of Solomon the Great. That's what they saw. Jesus was going to come in, rise an army, and he's going to kick those dirty Romans back to where they belong. He's going to kick them out. Israel's borders would have been restored. The temple worship would have been restored. And everything would have gone back to the way that they remembered they should be. But this isn't what it meant for Jesus to be the Messiah. Jesus was showing them for him to be the Messiah, the Christ, it means for him to be the suffering servant that was prophesied about by Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 53. If you've never read that before, take some time today to open your word to Isaiah 53 and read that. Because that's Jesus. He is the suffering servant that Isaiah speaks about. So read that, because this is what it means for Jesus to be the Christ. How often are we just like Peter and misunderstand who Jesus really is, what Jesus has really been doing, and where it is Jesus would go, where it is Jesus would have us go as his followers? Because later on in Mark 8:35, he'll say this, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. And this is right after he says that we would have to take up our own cross and follow him. Taking up your cross in this time period meant one thing and one thing only. It meant death. Excruciating, horrible, torturous death. How often, like Peter and the other disciples, as the other disciples aren't innocent here, Peter's just the only one that had the guts to grab Jesus and say, no, that you're confused, Jesus. He was the only one that stood up to say something. I'm sure all the disciples were joint with Peter in their confusion. How often have we, like this, just got it wrong? Still fully not understand who Jesus is. How often are we, like Peter? This theme of misunderstanding will continue throughout chapters 9 and 10 of Mark's gospel. In fact, this theme of misunderstanding has been in the beginning of the gospel all the way up to the point that we're at today. If you go back and look at like the times where Jesus calms the winds and the waves, you know, when they're on the boat and they're struggling to survive, who is this, they say? Who is this that even the winds and waves obey him? And then in the second time, because it happens twice in Mark's gospel, not just once, Mark records two times where this happens, that they're utterly astounded. They're astonished by it. They're dumbfounded by it. They knew Jesus could do it because he had done it before, but they still just didn't understand. They didn't fully grasp who he was and who he was saying he was. So often, like the disciples, we miss the point, and they keep missing the point. We see this in Mark 9, 30 through 32, as we continue through the Gospel of Mark. It says this: they went on from there and passed through Galilee. And he did not want anyone to know, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise." But they did not understand the saying, and we're afraid to ask him. I can see the disciples as they're going from place to place going, "Do you see how he talked to Peter when Peter questioned him? I don't want to take that, you know, so we'll stay quiet." And they discuss amongst themselves this. And Jesus eventually turns to them later on in this passage and says, "What are you guys discussing on the way?" We're discussing about who's the greatest. Once again, completely missing the point. Completely missing the point Jesus was trying to make. Completely misunderstanding who Jesus is and what it is that Jesus has come to do. And it's there where Jesus corrects them. "The greatest among you is going to be a servant to all. The greatest among you will be the least." And he turns their world upside down yet again. And then in Mark 10, 32 through 35, we see Jesus teaching them yet again the same thing over again. It says this in Mark 10, 32 through 34, "And they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them, and they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And talking and taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was to happen to him, saying, 'See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise.'" Which even in this third moment, we see the disciples don't get the point. They don't get what it is that Jesus is teaching them. They misunderstand yet again, and they continue to misunderstand until the day of his resurrection. All the Gospels record the disciples' just amazement over the resurrection. You know, one of the Gospels record them that they're in a locked room. They're in a locked room cowering for fear of what might happen to them. And Jesus appears in the flesh with them. And what does he tell them? To not be afraid. And he explains to them again that all that must have taken place to get to the point that they're at that day. And it isn't until that moment where it says in the Bible, they understood. They understood all that he had said before. They understood what Jesus said about him having to be crucified. They understood, finally, the light bulb finally went off. You know those cartoons where it shows the cartoon character who finally gets a bright idea and the light bulb appears above their head? That's what happens for the disciples in that moment. But it definitely takes more than once. And this whole section of Mark is tied together by a healing story of a blind man. Another story of a blind man receiving his sight. A blind man named Bartimaeus outside of Jericho. And this is typical of Mark. In fact, someone asked me a wonderful question this past week about how Mark wrote his gospel. And it's something I failed to mention last week, how Mark will sandwich stories. He'll start telling you one thing and then start telling you all these other things, and then he'll finish the point he started with, the first point. We saw this with Jairus' daughter. You know, Jairus comes before Jesus to heal his daughter, and then he goes on the way, and then Mark breaks off to the story of a woman with a bleeding condition, and then gets back to the story of Jairus' daughter. We saw this again last week in our passage. The disciples went as Jesus sent them forth to do the work of the kingdom. John the Baptist is beheaded. The disciples return. It's called a Markan sandwich, and boy, they're wonderful and delicious. And what we have here in chapters 8 to 10 is one big sandwich, teaching us a very important principle and fact of life. Sometimes it takes more than once to open the eyes of the blind. It takes more than once. And it starts with the healing of the blind man with two touches, the disciples' confusion, and then finishes with the healing of blind Bartimaeus. Even for the disciples, it took more than once. They got to walk with Jesus. Like, he was physically in the flesh beside them. They got to hear his words directly from his mouth. And they still missed the point. How much more should we as disciples today listen to the words from his mouth? Listen to this word. Pour our hearts into this word. Read it again and again, even if we don't understand, but to read it again to get better understanding. Because we all struggle to grasp who Jesus really is. Even the disciples struggled with who he really was. Surely we should do the same, to keep listening, to keep reading. But here's the good news. No matter how many times we get it wrong, Jesus is willing to show us again and again and again. No matter how many times it takes for each and every one of us to see him for who he really is. He is patient with you. He is merciful to you. He is kind. He doesn't tell you to go away. He doesn't tell you you're not good enough. He doesn't tell the disciples who misunderstand him time and time again to go get me disciples with higher IQs. I'm done with you. No, he doesn't do that. He shows grace. He shows mercy. He shows kindness. He shows compassion, no matter how many times it takes. Because as long as we are willing to put our faith and trust in him, he will show us again and again until we understand. He will never give up on you, but will continue to show you the better way in him until you finally understand, knowing clearly that it takes more than once to open the eyes of the spiritually blind. Have you ever felt like you just don't get it? Don't worry. You're in good company. You stand with Peter, James, and John, and all the other apostles. You stand in a wonderful crowd right here in your family of families. I mean, you can look to your left and right now and see people who just don't get it sometimes. And that's okay. Because there is yet grace enough for you. There is mercy for you. There is love, compassion, and kindness for you. It is okay. He understands. And no matter how many times we get it wrong, he's willing to take us, to correct us, to reorient us and reprove us, to teach us the better way in him. No matter how many times it takes for us to fully see him for who he is. This is the word of the Lord. Now, in conclusion, I want to say just one more thing. Just as we struggle to see and understand Jesus for who he truly is as followers, know this, every person in the world out there struggles the same. Every person, your neighbors, your friends, your worst enemies, they all struggle just the same. The loved one that you've been praying for is struggling all the same. Like Jesus with you, don't give up on them. Be willing to preach. Be willing to teach. Be willing to repeat, to share, no matter how many times it takes. Knowing it took more than once for you to have your eyes open, it's going to take more than once for them as well. For we all have those moments where we just don't understand. Do not give up. Do not lose hope. Show the same grace, love, mercy, and kindness that Jesus has shown you. No matter how many times it takes. Amen. Which, if you didn't know, is a Greek word. Amen. And the word literally means let it be. Let it truly be the case for us as we go and take the gospel to others. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of the Lord remains forever. Let it be. Let it be.